second case set for oral argument today is case number A19-681, State versus Jeffrey Capus. Or if there's a different pronunciation, I will await counsel's argument. Counsel for appellant may begin. Counsel for respondent, you may take your seat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Unless the counsel responded, did you have anything you wish to say at the outset?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. You may begin. Thank you.
May it please the court and opposing counsel. My name is Stephen Budke, and I represent the appellant Jeffrey Capus. The issue in this one is fairly simple. We are challenging whether or not the district court erred in concluding that there was sufficient evidence to justify the administration of the preliminary breath test in this matter. This case proceeded, the investigation in this case proceeded in a much more expedited fashion than any other case I've seen for DWI. An officer saw a vehicle in a ditch in the middle of winter. The driver of that vehicle approached the officer as the officer approached the vehicle. The officer did not notice the odor of alcohol. He said that he noticed some swaying and maybe some slurred speech, but acknowledged that given the extremely frigid temperatures that night, that behavior could have just as likely been caused by the weather as impairment or anything else. Rather than doing any field sobriety tests or carrying on a conversation any further, the trooper simply instructed Mr. Capus to follow him to his squad car, placed him in the back seat of that squad car, and told him he was going to give him a preliminary breath test. From the time the officer saw the vehicle in the ditch to the time that he told him that he was going to the back of the squad car, 54 seconds elapsed.
And Mr. Budke, can I just clarify something? A statement you said right before that about the weather. I thought I saw in the report that the weather conditions, other than cold, the pavement was dry and there was nothing else. So in other words, it wasn't snow, blizzard condition, or anything like that. And so my understanding is indeed the very fact that the road itself was otherwise not affected by the weather was one of the factors that the trooper had in mind of impairment.
It is correct that the report said that the road itself was not slippery. I believe there was some discussion about how there were certain patches that may have been icy, but there was certainly nothing in evidence that suggested that he slipped in there because of that. But again, that is not something that was investigated prior to instructing Mr. Capus to go into the back of the squad car. In most cases, I would say, in any sufficient DWI investigation, an officer would approach the individual, would have a conversation with them. Typically, they smell the odor of alcohol, which is what leads to the field sobriety tests, and those results are what lead to the administration of the preliminary breath test. Here, we have a situation where an officer simply approached a vehicle, whether it was the cold or some other reason, did not choose to conduct a full investigation, and simply placed Mr. Capus in the back of a squad car.
The reason I inquire, though, isn't that a pretty, not a small difference from your standard roadside, where if the vehicle had been parked in the line, off the shoulder, and the officer simply went up to, what's going on. But here, obviously, and I understand it was actually in the opposite ditch of the direction the car was going. Isn't that a pretty significant factor when looking at the basis than the judge did here as part of the basis for the suspicion?
I would say that it forms a good basis for suspicion to conduct a DWI investigation, Your Honor. The fact is, a vehicle in the ditch, in the absence of ice, does not mean DWI. There are any number of reasons a vehicle can be in the ditch, absent ice being on the road. Vehicles are in the ditch in the middle of July. And under those circumstances, we would never allow an officer to simply tell that driver, follow me to my squad car, 54 seconds after that encounter and say, blow into this preliminary breath test. That would not stand. And given these facts, we have to put ourselves in the same position there. If an individual is approached by a law enforcement officer and instructed to go to the back of a squad car, they're going to follow. They're going to comply. Now, what did the officer have prior to that moment? Because that's the moment that matters, is when he instructs him to go to the car, not when he tells him to take the preliminary breath test. So from the time he meets him to the time he asks him to take that, what evidence of impairment do we have? I understand Your Honor's question about there wasn't ice on the road and we have a vehicle in the ditch. Couldn't that serve as a basis? Not as a sufficient basis to ask for a preliminary breath test.
Well, the only reason I inquired at the time is you made mention of the road, but of course we know on the record then you have the swaying and the slurring together with a car in the ditch. Would that not be sufficient in of itself, given that the case law suggested you only need one, and I understand your point about the ditch alone, and if you didn't have the swaying or slurring, wouldn't that put this in an entirely different factual scenario in terms of our review?
If you could remove the other possibilities, then yes, I would agree with that. But the officer was very candid at the hearing in this matter and conceded that it was highly likely that an individual not properly dressed for the weather in that frigid cold would be swaying to keep themselves warm potentially. It could be a result of the accident. It could be any number of things that are not necessarily an indicia of impairment. I would say most individuals in a ditch in the middle of the night, in the middle of winter, in sub-zero temperatures would probably be swaying, and the officer conceded he had never heard my client speak before. So whether that speech was more slurred than normal is also a question, and whether his speech was slurred simply because of the cold is also another question. Those are the reasons why a DWI investigation should have unfolded. Those are the things that would allow somebody to further an investigation. The case law that talks about a single indicia of impairment, typically that single indicia of impairment is the odor of alcohol, because that one's a pretty obvious one that somebody's been drinking. The officer said that he was standing within arm's length of my client and did not detect an odor of alcohol. Now, I believe there was some discussion at the time about how maybe it was too cold out for him to, for his nose to be working properly or whatever it was that he said. If the officer can say that about why he couldn't detect the odor of alcohol, that same logic would apply to why my client may have been swaying side to side or speaking different than normal. The case law talks about a single indicia of impairment. That single indicia of impairment has to be stronger than what we have here. This is a straightforward encounter with a law enforcement officer. The officer does not have evidence that somebody's actually impaired. They simply have evidence that somebody went into a ditch. And are they behaving consistent with somebody who is standing out in the middle of the night, in the middle of winter, in sub-zero temperatures? Yes. If he wants to investigate further, there are procedures for that. That's what field sobriety tests are for. Or he even noted at the time that Mr. Kappas's car was in working condition. If he wanted to place him in a car so that he could carry on a conversation with them, maybe investigate, you know, where had he been. If you wanted to get him out of the cold so that he could further an investigation, there were ways to do that without placing him in the back of a squad car where Mr. Kappas was not free to leave and, of course, would not believe that he had any right to say no to anything.
So, you're saying it would have been all right if you just put him in the front seat?
I don't think so. I think there is a distinction. I think it's on a spectrum. I think if you're in the back seat of a car, back seat of a squad car, you definitely know that you're not free to leave. We as a society know what it means when you're in the back seat of a squad. If you're in the front seat and the officer makes certain statements saying, you're not under arrest, I just wanted to get you out of the cold, you know, sit here, you're free to leave, I think there can be a way that you can massage that to be acceptable. But under a lot of circumstances, I think that might still present problems. But regardless, putting him into the back of that squad car was the definitive factor in that issue, I think.
Am I correct that the officer eventually smelled some alcohol? And at what point was that?
In the squad car.
And before or after the PBT had been administered?
I believe he testified that it was when he got into the squad car before he administered the preliminary breath test, but the officer instructed my client to go to his vehicle so he could give him the preliminary breath test.
I understand. But at the time that the test was administered, the officer had the additional information. He had at that point smelled the odor.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm not making an argument that the officer told him to go to the back of his squad car and he had this unarticulated intention of asking for a preliminary breath test. I believe he said, you are going to follow, or I'm going to have you come with me to my squad or to my car, and I'm going to give you a preliminary breath test. So when they were still outside, he told Mr. Kappas that he was going to be administering that. That's the moment that matters, not when he actually held the device out for him. The amount of time that passed between him telling him, I'm giving you a preliminary breath test, and actually administering it, that time span cannot be used to gather additional evidence to justify the administration of the preliminary breath test.
And why not? Do you have legal authority on that issue?
I don't think I've seen a case directly on point on that. I think it would simply go without saying.
Generally an objective test applies, not a subjective test, right? So we take the information available to a reasonable officer and what the reasonable officer would do. You're objecting to the administration of the test, which elicited certain information, not to the request. But I don't know.
Well, I would ask Your Honor to maybe reconsider how you're viewing that encounter, because what the court is suggesting is that the officer had a basis to administer the preliminary breath test once he noticed the odor of alcohol in the squad car.
Well, he had a better basis, for sure. He had more information and more information suggesting impairment.
And I think that would carry more weight and hold water if the officer would have actually used that information to determine whether or not to administer a preliminary breath test. He wasn't going to step into the squad car and say, well, I didn't smell the odor of alcohol, so never mind that what I just told you I'm going to do, I'm not going to do anymore. He made it clear he was administering this preliminary breath test, and my client was complying with the officer at that point. And so when he tells him that instruction, that is the moment that we have to look at the evidence, the objective evidence that he had at that time.
You credit the officer being quite candid, but part of his testimony was that he did not believe that the appellant was swaying because of the wind, because the appellant was not swaying with the wind, but was swaying against it. That seems to indicate that he had more than just a hunch that there was some impairment.
And I believe that was on direct, I don't have it in front of me, I apologize. I believe that was on direct exam, and it was on cross-exam when I asked him, could that have been just as likely caused by the weather? And that's when he conceded yes. So I understand Your Honor's point that is where he was curious and looking, but that curiosity is what leads to DWI investigations, not to follow me to my squad car and blow into this device. That's the distinction. I'm not arguing that the officer, or that these set of facts, scratch that. I lost where I was
going. Mr. Budke, can I, if you come back to it, let us
know. All right, thank you.
The implication of your statement, if I understand correctly, is that you believe there is a different standard among the field sobriety testing options that an officer must have before requiring a preliminary breath test. And I understand tradition, you mentioned it, and certainly if we didn't have the cold weather and so forth, we know that usually that's, if not the last, close to the last of the field sobriety testing. But would you agree, since probable cause is not required for a PBT, and Vondracek confirmed that any number of the field sobriety testing the officer could do could include the first being the PBT, as opposed to walk the line and follow my doing the horizontal gaze and nystagmus and so forth?
I wouldn't go that far. I would argue.
Part of what I'm getting at is, I know that was the part of the question about the front seat versus the back seat. How about if the officer simply handed the PBT to him in his own car, would you please blow into it?
I do believe that there needs to be more for the preliminary breath test before.
More than other fields.
More than the other field sobriety
tests. How much more?
Usually the field sobriety test evidence. There needs to be something other than an individual in the ditch. That's essentially what we have here. Because of the officer's testimony on cross, where he says it could have been just as likely that he was swaying and his speech was affected by the cold, what we have that differentiates this case from other DWI investigations is the vehicle in the ditch versus driving conduct.
So, and you mentioned, too, about the back seat being critical part of your analysis. How about if the officer, because once he got out, saw the swing, heard the slurring, okay, you can sit back in your car and I'm going to have you blow into a PBT. Would that be sufficient under these facts and your understanding for the officer to require?
To do immediately, I would suggest no. To put him back in his vehicle to carry on a conversation where he could find out where had you been coming from, how much did you have to drink, the typical questions that are asked during a DWI, potentially even running the horizontal gaze nystagmus test in an environment that could be still controlled. I've seen those conducted in vehicles.
Your main point, though, is what's critical here is the absence of alcohol smell.
I do believe that is a critical stage in this, and I can certainly continue answering the question that the court would like, but I do see I'm out of time.
Well, feel free to give a complete answer to the question.
And I apologize. Can Your Honor restate the last part of the question?
What's critical, you believe, for us to consider here is the lack of an odor of alcohol.
Yes, because that is the indicia of impairment that the courts have traditionally looked at and said, this is because of alcohol consumption. When you have swaying in the frigid cold temperatures, the swaying could be because of alcohol, it could be because of a medical condition, because of any number of things. But typically there are not other reasons for an individual smelling like consumed alcoholic beverages, other than they consumed alcoholic beverages. So that's why that one is typically sufficient on its face to justify furthering the investigation.
Thank you, Mr. Budke. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, the appellant appeared before...
Could you please identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry, Your
Honor.
That's
okay.
My name is Michael Chisholm. I am an assistant county attorney with Morrison County, located in the city of Little Falls.
Thank you.
Your Honors, the appellant appeared before Judge Weiler on June 12th, 2018 for a contested omnibus hearing. Minnesota State Patrol Trooper Samuel Catlin testified before Judge Weiler, and after hearing the trooper's testimony, both under direct and cross-examination, Judge Weiler found that his testimony was credible, and he determined that there was a reasonable, articulable suspicion to ask the appellant, Mr. Kappas, to submit to a PBT. Now, the appellant argues that most DUIs go in a linear, predictable manner. And that's simply not the case. Every DUI involves a different person. There's different physical characteristics to that person. There's different types and amounts of intoxicants involved. And there's different physical environments where the stop and the encounter occur. That is why there are specifically no identified, enumerated, and mandatory indicia of intoxication that must be present to allow an officer to find a reasonable, articulable suspicion that an individual is violating Minnesota Statute 169A.20, the DUI statutes. The standard that does apply was articulated by this court in the Otto case just last year. There are two critical holdings in Otto that apply to the issue before the court today. First, Otto states that an officer must have a reasonable, articulable suspicion that a driver is under the influence of alcohol before requiring either field sobriety tests or PBT. The second is that one objective indicator of intoxication can constitute reasonable and probable grounds to believe a person is under the influence. That second part is really what we're dealing with here, the indicia of intoxication. Now, Mr. Budke has indicated that the odor of alcohol or lack of odor of alcohol is the real hinge to this entire case. It's what everything turns on. In fact, he argues that Trooper Catlin had absolutely no reasonable suspicion, no basis, let alone a reasonable one, to bypass typical investigative stages and jump to a PBT. He further argues that Trooper Catlin gathered no evidence of impairment, and that's simply not the case.
Mr. Chisholm, can I just inquire on that? Would it be safe to say, at the one point he makes, that you'd be hard-pressed to find a case even where they reference single indicia, where there is not, at a minimum, an odor, which itself may not be an indicia, but then typically the single has to do with some other, such as here where a car's in a ditch and you have a smell of alcohol versus simply a smell of alcohol, which we know in and of itself is an indicia of drinking alcohol, which isn't illegal at this point. So at least on its face, based on the case law, wouldn't that at least put it in a bit of a unique realm here where we don't have an odor of alcohol, and so there's no illegal substance at that stage or impairment, simply a car in the ditch.
Forgive me for interrupting while you were questioning. If that's all we had was a vehicle in the ditch and no odor of alcohol, that would probably hold true. I would agree with that. But that's not what we have in this case. We have, in fact, three clear indicia of intoxication that the officer has been trained to see and did, in fact, perceive that night, as well as approximately seven different circumstances which, in his training and experience, are commonplace to DUI-type cases. The real key here is that, and we'll concede, he did not smell an odor of an alcoholic beverage while he was talking to Mr. Kappas next to his vehicle. But what he did perceive was the fact that the appellant, although he only had one eye, his other eye was watery. Bloodshot, watery eyes are an accepted indicia of intoxication by both this court and the Supreme Court. His speech was slurred, another accepted indicia of intoxication. Additionally, he was swaying when he got out of the vehicle. Now, Mr. Budke in his argument has made a lot of points about the fact that Trooper Catlin admitted that or stated that the cold weather could have caused the swaying. But if you look at the record and you look at the questions, I believe the question was posed to him, is it possible that the weather contributed to his swaying? Is it possible? Certainly, everything's possible to a certain extent. But the fact of the matter is when Trooper Catlin encountered Mr. Kappas, what he saw was a vehicle in the ditch at approximately 11 o'clock on a Saturday night with no indication as to why that vehicle went into the ditch. The roads were dry. Trooper Catlin had no trouble controlling his vehicle and testified to that. He went down, he started talking to him. It was windy that night. Everyone has conceded it was windy that night, which is a reasonable explanation as to why Trooper Catlin may not have smelled the odor of alcohol initially upon speaking to Mr. Kappas. Additionally, the trooper testified that it was very cold and his nose was frozen. So that's another reasonable explanation as to why he didn't smell the odor of alcohol right then and there. But the other two, or the other three indicia of intoxication very clearly gave him a reasonable articulable suspicion that Mr. Kappas was under the influence of alcohol. The other indications that he had was that in speaking to Mr. Kappas, Mr. Kappas's answers to his questions were not typical of a sober person. When asked how he was doing or what was going on, he said, "It's doing or I'm doing." Trooper Catlin testified that the appellant's answers were slow, as if he was trying to come up with an answer, which is commonplace in DUI-type cases. Your Honors, I would also like to point out a couple of other things. Counsel argues, at least in his brief, that there was no driving conduct observed that night. Driving conduct is not necessary to begin and conduct a DUI investigation. Some cases, the vehicle is in the ditch, as in this case. Other cases, an individual can be passed out in a parking lot when they're encountered by, when the officer contacts them, comes to find out they're drunk. Additionally, some cases, a car is pulled over for a equipment violation and the officer learns the driver is impaired. So driving conduct is not key. In looking at this, the swaying, and this is something that appellant talked quite a bit about, Trooper Catlin testified that he did not believe that the cold was the reason for the swaying. He testified that the appellant was swaying immediately after getting out of a warm car. He testified that he, Trooper Catlin, was not swaying. And specifically, he said that the appellant was swaying in the opposite direction of the wind. Now, for argument's sake, if the wind was somehow causing this man to sway, why would he be swaying in the opposite direction of the wind? It's much more likely that the alcohol he consumed is what was causing his swaying, not the wind or the cold temperatures. Trooper Catlin also testified that in his training and experience, cold weather does not cause people to sway or have slurred speech. As to why there were no other field sobriety tests done, Trooper Catlin testified that the sides of the road where he would normally perform those field sobriety tests, because it has to be a level surface, so down in the ditch wouldn't work, he testified that the sides of the roads were icy right along the sides where he would perform those tests, which is why he chose not to do that. He also felt that because of the weather that night, it was not necessary.
I thought that the roads were the pavement was dry.
The pavement, Your Honor, correct. The pavement, the actual roads were dry, but there was some ice and snow along the sides of the road on the opposite sides of the fog line.
You mean on the shoulder?
On the shoulders. And what's important to point out also, Your Honor, is that Trooper Catlin did look at the street, did look at the road, and saw nothing that would indicate that the roads played any role in Mr. Campos going into the ditch that night.
Did the trooper, did the trooper at any time specifically inquire of the appellant how the car got into the ditch before asking him to submit to PBT?
He did not, Your Honor, and Trooper Catlin indicated that it's kind of unusual for people when they're sober and they're in the ditch. They're normally apologetic or angry or what have you, kind of frustrated that they're in that situation. I think we've all gone into the ditch and no one's happy about it. But Mr. Kappas that particular night was kind of laid back and never offered an explanation as to why he was in the ditch. Now, Your Honors, the last thing I want to point out, and this goes directly to what appellate was arguing earlier, is that reasonable suspicion can be found even when a person's behavior is consistent with innocent activity. A police officer is entitled to assess all the circumstances and draw inferences and make deductions in determining whether reasonable suspicion exists or is allayed. That's State v. Combs, 398 Northwest 2nd, 563, a Supreme Court case from 1987 here in Minnesota. It also cites U.S. v. Cortez, 491 U.S. 441. However, additionally, it says that the police officer's assessment of the situation must yield a particularized suspicion that the suspect was engaged in wrongdoing. All of the circumstances of this stop or this contact, it wasn't a stop, it was a contact, that Trooper Catlin observed that night gave him a reasonable, articulable suspicion that the defendant was violating Minnesota Statute 169A.20. The car was in the ditch for no apparent reason. The appellate's answers to questions were inappropriate or unusual for someone that would have been sober. He was swaying. His speech was slurred. His eye was watery. He offered no explanation as to what was happening. He had stated he went to a gas station at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night for no other reason, offered no other explanation. Trooper Catlin had a reasonable, articulable suspicion to ask for the PBT. He took the defendant up to the squad car. He had him sit in the back seat. The door was open. At that time, he smelled the odor of an alcoholic beverage. Mr. Kappas did PBT that night. And that's a very important thing to understand, is Mr. Kappas did PBT, the result of which, and forgive me for having to double check, but I believe, yes, the PBT result was 0.19. He later gave a breath test, which was a 0.18. He had a reasonable articulable suspicion, Your Honor. He conducted the investigation appropriately. Was it 50? I believe counsel said 54 seconds. I thought it was 58, but regardless, 54, 58 seconds, less than a minute. Yes, it was. But in experience and in training, most people can walk into a room or walk into a situation and see a person that's highly intoxicated and figure out that that person's intoxicated based on what they're observing in a very, very short period of time. This trooper is trained to do that, and that's why he was able to do it as quickly as he can, or as quickly as he did. If there's no other questions, I conclude by asking that this court affirm the district court in all respects. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chisholm. Mr. Budke, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you. We had to talk to you for 5 more minutes. Trooper Catlin talked to Mr. Kappas for less than 1/5 that amount of time before instructing him to take a preliminary breath test. 54 seconds is what my argument hinges on here. We've heard some discussion about how my entire contention is that you can't have a DWI investigation without the odor of alcohol. That's not necessarily where I'm going with this. What I'm saying is you have to look at all of the objective evidence that is in front of the officer prior to the decision to administer a preliminary breath test and ask if that is enough to justify that. That's why we have field sobriety tests. That's why officers assess the environment. That's why they look around. That's why they talk to the suspect, because they are gathering evidence to determine whether or not they can do that. And for purposes of pointing this out, 54 seconds just expired since I started talking right there. That's how long.
So your opposing counsel identified several indicia and circumstances. I mean, isn't it really more important the quantity and quality of the information known to the officer rather than the amount of time that it takes to assemble that information?
I would agree. There are circumstances where quality information can be gathered in a very quick amount of time. That didn't happen here. The officer cannot have it both ways. I want to be very clear about that. His nose wasn't working because it was so cold, but the swaying could not have been because of the cold.
Or because of the wind.
There's also been some discussion of the wind, and I'm not sure how we got sidetracked into this discussion of the wind blowing my client around. No, nobody ever made that argument.
No, but blowing his breath away. I think that was a point made somewhere that he may not have smelled alcohol in his breath because it was windy, and so the wind would have blown the breath away and not.
Completely speculative, and quite frankly, it's an argument I've never heard before, and it doesn't need to be sub-zero temperatures for it to be windy. It's windy all the time, and we always have officers say that they smell the odor of alcohol. This is a unique situation. What I'm referencing with the wind is this discussion of he was swaying into the wind as opposed to against it. I'm arguing that the cold was the reason for the swaying, not that the wind was blowing Mr. Kappas around during that time.
The problem I have is that we have findings by the district court, and we'd have to say that they're completely wrong almost to reverse. How do you argue that we should do that?
Opposing counsel argued that the officer testified credibly. A lot of his testimony was credible. We're not arguing about a lot of the facts. Those are hard cases to argue on my side when I'm saying the officer didn't testify credibly, because as we know, the court gets the discretion that. I'm asking this court to look at the facts that were placed there that the judge cited and ask whether or not those are actually sufficient given the record. The judge who handled the companion implied consent matter prior to this found that that same set of facts did not justify the administration of the preliminary breath test. There is simply not enough evidence on its face here, even as to what the officer testified to, to justify the preliminary breath test. If I were suggesting that the officer was not credible or was somehow deceitful, that would be a very uphill battle for me here. But here there just simply is not anything in the record. This order appeared to be nothing more than a rubber stamp to keep the case moving forward. I made my argument, counsel made his argument, judge said this is going to proceed to trial, go pick a date. That is how we get here today. These facts were simply not sufficient on its face.
Excuse me, with respect to the implied consent case, do you happen to know, is that on appeal?
It is not, because the Attorney General's office simply accepted the ruling.
Okay.
And again, I would note for the record that Trooper Catlin's answers were the exact same. As far as Mr. Kappas's behavior, these are not facts that I believe would even be argued if field sobriety tests had been done. I haven't had a case where we've argued that, well, he was too laid back for someone being in the ditch. Mr. Kappas drives a tow truck for a living. He's been in that scenario several times, just maybe not on that side of it. So it's not unheard of that he would be calm. That he was at a gas station at 11 o'clock at night, I don't want to live in a world where that is suspect. That is something he's entitled to do and certainly does not form the basis for this. There needs to be a proper investigation done. If this is all an officer ever needed to do was say, hey, there's an accident, I'm going to have you blow into this device, that's not a system that would generally be upheld, I would assume. So I see I'm out of time again. So if there are no further questions, I will end my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Becky. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days.